Looks like we have a caller holding, so let's go right to the calls. Or call, rather, because I have one call holding, so can't use the plural. Let's go to Sheldon in Tucson. Sheldon, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Lee.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, regardless of the email exchanges between me and you on 9/11, you know, we're totally different worlds on the issue, but I'm hearing a lot of truth on what I'm hearing you talk about in your shows.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, Sheldon, you know, I mean, on the issue of 9/11, I don't think we're really that far apart. It's just on one nuance of 9/11, we just don't agree. I don't think we're that far apart on the issue of 9/11.
Oh, okay, well, whatever. And I wanted to tell you that I didn't get to hear the beginning of your show here tonight, but did you talk about this asteroid that was supposed to pass us about 5.5 hours ago?
Oh, I actually talked about that yesterday. That's why I didn't bring it up. But, yes, I did hear about that, and I talked about it briefly yesterday. Yes, there was an asteroid that, I guess, passed within the orbit of the moon or something along those lines. Is that the story you're referring to?
I was just reading about it, 223,000 miles away, which is 9/10 of the distance out to the moon, and this rock was 71 feet in diameter. You know, I got to thinking about that. John Moore, he said that this Planet X object is supposed to have a debris field of rocks 250,000 miles wide on either side of it, and even his research associate, John DiNardo, is also talking about this. Maybe we're starting to see some of the debris field coming in, but it's something, though, that, you know, they're staying so far away from Earth, though.
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly what's going on. I mean, it's I know it's interesting that we've seen several comets pass through the sun. That's interesting. We're seeing more and more of an emphasis on near-Earth objects, and that's also interesting. And also the fact that NASA is getting $2.4 billion for this a project to study climate change on the planet, which I think is totally ridiculous. I think they're funneling $2.4 billion into something else, maybe to be looking at whatever might be coming to this planet or for any other purpose. So there's definitely a lot of circumstantial evidence out there to indicate that they might be looking for something or getting ready for something. And, you know, your guess is as good as mine, but it certainly, you know, Planet X is one of those possibilities. I wouldn't dismiss it.
Yeah, you mentioned NASA. I actually have an update about that relocation contract where NASA started relocating their own employees over the last 3 years.
Yep.
I got an update. That's undergoing legal review now before it's released to me. That contract has gone 55 modifications since its inception.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I mean, the one thing that I find really suspicious about NASA is, you know, they just canceled the Constellation program out of the blue. They are ceasing shuttle flights, and you see them pretty much just eliminating all these major NASA programs all of a sudden. So, you know, that, of course, is curious as well. So, I mean, there's just so much going on here, Sheldon. I mean, it's hard to get a 100% real picture of what's going on, but I think we're getting glimpses as to what's happening. So I'm sure we'll find out more of what's going on in the future. But we have some clues. That much is certain.
I wanted to point this out, too. I don't know if you've heard anybody talking about some big event that's supposed to happen on April 12th. Have you heard
big
that?
Big event, April 12th. No, I haven't. What's the big rumor?
Well, John Moore and his retired U.S. Navy Submarine Corps veteran whistleblower Tim Spencer are saying that the Torah code in the Bible says some big event is supposed to happen on the 12th, and I got to thinking about that. April 12th is the first the anniversary of the first space shuttle launch. So maybe if something did happen on the 12th, it would be a space-based event. By the way, the first shuttle that went up was a Columbia, and the Columbia was sacrificed over Texas, so it's kind of hard to explain, but if you think about it, you know, they got this distorted way of hinting symbolically to us what they're doing.
Well, do they have a shuttle launch that just took place recently? I can't remember. Is there a shuttle up there right
there's
now?
One up, there's one up there right now, and it's got three women on it, by the way. I've never heard of a a shuttle mission with three women on it.
Yeah, actually, you know what? That's right. I remember seeing that link. That is interesting. So April 12th. Well, you know, the thing about these dates is that, you know, a lot of people throw out dates, and then sometimes, well, actually, most times, nothing actually happens. So, you know, I'm not sure exactly what led them to believe that April 12th, an event's going to happen. I guess it's what the Bible, but, you know, it's hard to predict the future. So, you know, we'll just have to see. If something happens on April 12th, it'll validate their findings, I guess. But, you know, I guess I just can't draw or jump to those conclusions until we actually see the event. I just try to stay away from specific date predictions because it's so hard to pinpoint if something is actually going to happen that particular date. But, you know, I'll keep an eye out, and we'll see what happens April 12th.
Yeah, actually, Lee, I'm very suspicious of people that give out dates myself, but I thought I'd just throw it out for what it's worth. And the one last thing I wanted to mention to you was, did you get this email I sent you this morning about this big earthquake drill that was held in California back in 2008 called the Great California Shakeout and Golden Guardian Exercise?
I saw the email. I didn't get a chance to look at it yet. What's it about?
Well, there was a big drill that they had back in 2008 projecting what scenarios could happen if a 7.8 hit the San Andreas Fault. And then I got to thinking about that. There was a seismologist named Lucy Jones that attended an emergency training workshop back in 2001 held by FEMA in California. And they threw out these scenarios, what could happen to the U.S. in the future. The first one was a terrorist attack in New York City. Well, they got that one right on the money. The second thing was a devastating hurricane that hit New Orleans. That happened. So that FEMA was right on target with their first two scenarios they threw out at this seismologist in 2001. And the third thing they threw out would be a devastating quake near San Francisco someday.
That's interesting. Well, I'll look into that. I wasn't aware of that information. I'll check it out and see what it's all about. And you know, there's a lot of fascinating stuff going on, that's for sure. But Sheldon, do you have anything else you want to add before I let you go? I've got our call lined up, and I just want to give them a chance to get on air.
Yeah, that'll be it, Lee. We'll talk to you some other time.
Okay, thanks for the phone call, Sheldon. I appreciate it. Thanks for the points. Yeah, just in case anybody didn't understand what we're talking about with 9/11, we just had email exchange back and forth over the weekend about direct energy weapons and things of that sort surrounding the events of 9/11. You know, I mean, Sheldon just has a particular point of view on 9/11. That's fine. You know, I just can't go as far as he does on the issue of 9/11 with direct energy weapons and things of that sort. But look, I tell you what, anything is possible. You know, I just can't jump that far and say, yes, direct energy weapons were used on 9/11. So I just haven't seen enough information to convince me that was actually the case. So that's kind of where the email exchange is going back and forth on the issue of 9/11. So just wanted to bring you guys in the loop in case you didn't know what we were talking about. That's what we're referring to. But, yeah, I mean, all this stuff that's going on is very interesting. A lot of stuff that Sheldon brought up with the earthquakes, with this near-Earth object. And we're seeing more and more stories about asteroids and meteorites and near-Earth objects. And it makes you wonder, when you have all these things happening, is there a larger story at play? Is a cosmic event about to take place? Is all this just being staged? I mean, it's hard to say. We don't know, but there's definitely something happening. There's a story behind all this, and we just have to find out what that story is. And as far as the April 12th date goes, I don't think anything's going to happen specifically on April 12th. I'd be very surprised if it does. Who knows? Maybe it will. But again, when you throw out dates and you say that something is definitely going to happen on that date, you know, usually what I've seen is that it doesn't come true. You don't see an event that takes place on that date. And the one date that was thrown out a little bit was based off of some of Lucas's research, September 28th, 2010, but I'm still not confident that an event's going to happen on that day. I'm not going to say that it will. But, you know, there you go. Anyway, we've got Sam Missouri. We'll get to his call after the break. Stay with us. All right, folks, final segment of the show. And, you know, just real quick, just to recap what I was saying about dates, and we'll bring Sam from Missouri on. You know, it is a fact that the elites, these people who are amongst these Illuminated fraternities and secret societies, and, you know, just the elite power structure as a whole, they like pulling off events that have astrological and numerical significance. I 100% agree with that. That is definitely true. The thing that is difficult to do is to predict with any certainty when they're going to pull off an event and in what manner they're going to pull off an event for whatever purpose. You know, it's very difficult to predict that. So, you know, we have hints just based upon the astrological cycles. We have hints based upon the numerical significance of dates. You know, those give us some clues, but, you know, they also pull off dates that have a numerical significance, like between one event and another event. So what they'll do is sometimes they'll pull off an event after a set amount of days, like 444 days or whatever, or something like that. I think, what was the one with the Madrid bombing? It was like after 9/11, it was like 911, or was it? It was, I think it was 911. Yeah, 911 days after the 9/11 attacks was the Madrid bombing, if I remember correctly. I'm going off the top of my head, and I'm pretty much dead exhausted right now, so if I'm not 100% correct on that, feel free to call me in tomorrow and correct my logic. But basically, that's what they like to do. It's using astrological events, astrological cycles, dates like the equinoxes, the solstices, things along those lines, as well as numerically significant dates. That is traditionally what they have pulled off major events on. And that's a fact. But again, when you try to predict a lot of these things, it can be very difficult. And I've just seen more people predict things that turn out not to happen. So, you know, we'll see what happens April 12th, but I'm not holding my breath. I don't think we're necessarily going to see an event, but who knows? You never know. So we'll see in a few days. We'll see what they decide to do. But, you know, April 15th is coming up, and then, of course, you got the Tea Party protest and things like that going on. So I think those things with the Tea Party protest, that's going to be very important to keep a close eye on, because, you know, who the hell knows what they're going to do with that. There's probably also some provocateurs. I can only imagine they could be setting up some sort of event there, but even that's just speculation. We don't know what they have planned. Nothing is certain. Who knows? Maybe nothing will happen. But certainly something we have to keep an eye on. But anyway, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Sam in Missouri. Sam, how you doing tonight?
Hello, Lee. You don't have Sam, but you have the other half, Trish.
Oh, it's Trish. Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. What about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. I'll be honest with you. I'm dead exhausted. I'm ready to fall asleep, but got about 6 minutes left in the show, so I'm trying to hang in there.
Well, I'll make it quick for you. I want to connect the dot. You were talking about the Council for National Policy and Chuck Baldwin not having direct links. I don't know that he necessarily does. However, he was a member of the Moral Majority with Jerry Falwell, he's gone now, of course, but he was a member of the Council for National Policy.
Yes, that's true. And Chuck Baldwin had a lot of great things to say about Jerry Falwell. So, yeah, there's definitely indirect links to the Council for National Policy as it pertains to Chuck Baldwin. I 100% agree. And that's a definitive fact. You can look that up and you can see that that's definitely true.
And another statement, I love these people that try to decode a book that has been tampered with so much, the Bible. I love it when they talk about predicting all these damn dates and stuff with the Bible that's been so tampered with, it isn't even funny. And the last thing, I quit listening to John Moore from another network when he lauded the praises thereof of Al Gore's film.
Oh, really? He likes The Inconvenient Truth?
Yes, I seem to get that vibe.
Well, I certainly don't agree with that point of view. So, you know, I mean, I've looked into some of John Moore's research, and, you know, the problem is that, you know, there's some good stuff there. There's some stuff I can draw from what he's talking about. But there's some other stuff that just makes me wonder if there's an ulterior motive behind what he's putting out.
There's
yeah.
a lot that makes me wonder. There's a lot that makes me wonder.
Well, the question is...
Oh,
go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay, all right. We're talking over each other. I'll just make my point real quick. You know, the main thing that I question about him mostly is that, you know, he talks about how the sea levels are going to rise and all this, but he's recommending people go to the Ozarks, which is not the highest place you can go. If this apocalyptic scenario is really going to unfold, why wouldn't you just go to the highest areas like the Rocky Mountains? Why would you recommend people go to the Ozarks? So I don't understand what he's doing with that. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, well, I know what you're saying, but I don't trust hardly a thing he says. That's just my assessment, and I don't get real good vibes. Anybody that tells me how great Al Gore's film is and, you know, that sort of thing, thanks, but no thanks. I don't need your trash either.
Yeah, well, the thing is that there are very few people out here in this type of research that you can trust, if anybody. I would just say don't trust anybody. You know, I even say on this show, don't even trust me. Because at this point, you have to do your own research because there's just so many people who are out there. I'm not saying that John Moore is necessarily doing this, but there are a lot of people out there who put out disinfo. There are a lot of people who have ulterior motives and agendas. So you really can't trust hardly anybody in the alternative research community except for yourself.
That's about right. Well, that's it for me, Lee. I just wanted to connect that dot for you regarding Chuck Baldwin and Jerry Falwell and the moral majority.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Trish. I appreciate it. And you're 100% correct that that Jerry Falwell had absolute links to Chuck Baldwin. Chuck Baldwin, I mean, if you just do a Google search, you can take a look. This glowing article that Chuck Baldwin wrote about Jerry Falwell. And essentially, Chuck Baldwin was Jerry Falwell's protege in many respects. So Jerry Falwell, being a member of the moral majority, he did have links back to the Council for National Policy. So right there, you have an indirect link between Chuck Baldwin and the Council for National Policy. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things. You know, we have all sorts of indirect links between Chuck Baldwin, the CNP, of course, Howard Phillips, and the Constitution Party. He, of course, as we covered earlier, helped to found the Council or the Constitution Party. And then you see Chuck Baldwin, who was the presidential nominee, the presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. So there's our link to the CNP that you have there. So there you go. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. But if you don't believe me, you know, just and you shouldn't, you know, you really shouldn't believe me. Just look into it for yourself and you'll see that there are definite links between Chuck Baldwin and Jerry Falwell and the indirect links to the Council for National Policy. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny because when you start studying these phony conservative groups and these so-called religious and political groups on the right, they're all connected to one another. You have these people who are members of all these different groups and they all have links and connections. It's really mind-boggling. So regardless if you look at the John Birch Society, the Council for National Policy, the Cato Institute, you have these various individuals that all seem to have their hands in each of these institutions. And the Hunt brothers are a few of the people that you should definitely look into. They certainly played a key role in a lot of these organizations back in the 1980s and even earlier than that. So, all right, it's just a very interesting field of research. So there you go. But anyway, we are out of time. Thanks again for tuning in tonight, and we will be back tomorrow within our show. Thanks again, and take care, everybody.